the limelight.
There is an ongoing but hidden Israeli regime war on the Palestinians, which is rarely highlighted or even known. It is a water war, which has been in the making for decades, says Ramzi Barood, journalist, in an article published under the heading "Murder of Menacing Water Technician on Shadow Wars in West Bank." Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. There is an ongoing but hidden Israeli regime war on the Palestinians, which is rarely highlighted or even known. It is a wider war, which has been in the making for decades. On July 26th and 27th, two separate but intrinsically linked events took place in Ain al-Helwa area in the occupied Jordan Valley and near the town of Beita, south of Nablus. In the first incident, Jewish settlers from the illegal settlements of Maskut began construction in Ain al-Helwa Spring, which has been a source of fresh water for villages and hundreds of Palestinian families in that area. The seizure of the spring has been developing for months, all under the watchful eye of the Israeli regime occupation army. Now, the Ain al-Helwa Spring, like most of the Jordan Valley's land and water resources, is annexed by the fake regime of Israel. Less than 24 hours later, Shadi Omar Salim, a Palestinian municipal employee, was killed by the Israeli regime forces in the town of Beita. The Israeli regime army quickly issued a statement which expectedly blamed the Palestinian for his own death. The Palestinian victim approached the Israeli regime troops with a menacing manner while holding what appeared to be an iron bar. Before he was gunned down, the Israeli regime army claimed, if the iron bar claim was true, it might be related to the fact that Salim was a water technician. Indeed, the Palestinian worker was on his way to open the pipes that supply water to Beita and other adjacent areas. Beita, which has witnessed much violence in recent weeks, is facing an existential threat. An illegal Jewish settlement called Givat Eviatar is being built atop the Palestinian Sabih mountain, in Arabic, Jabal Sabih. As usual, whenever a Jewish settlement is constructed, Palestinian life and livelihood are threatened. Thus, the ongoing Palestinian protest in the area. The struggle of Beita is a representation of the wider Palestinian struggle. Unarmed civilians fighting against a settler colonial state that ultimately wishes to replace a Palestinian village or town with a Jewish settlement. There is another facet to what may seem a typical story, where the Israeli regime army and Jewish settlers work together to ethnically cleanse Palestinians. Mekorot. The latter is a state-owned Israeli regime water company that literally steals Palestinian water and sells it back to the Palestinians at an exorbitant price. Unsurprisingly, Mekorot operates near Beita as well. The Palestinian worker Salim was killed because his job of supplying water to the people of Beita was a direct threat to Israeli regime colonial designs in this region. Let us put this in a larger context. The Zionist regime does not just occupy Palestinian land, It also systematically usurps all of its resources, including water, in flagrant violation of international law, which guarantees the fundamental rights of an occupied nation. The occupied West Bank obtains most of its water from the mountain aquifer, which is divided into three smaller aquifers: the Western Aquifer, the Eastern Aquifer, and the Northeastern Aquifer. In theory, Palestinians have plenty of water, at least enough to meet the minimally required water allotment of 102 to 120 liters per day, as recommended by the World Health Organization, WHO. In practice, however, this is hardly the case. Sadly, most of the water in these aquifers is appropriated directly by the Zionist regime. Some call it water capture. Palestinians call it more accurately theft. While in Palestine, or the Palestinian occupied territories, which is called Israel, the daily per capita water consumption is estimated at 300 liters. Illegal Jewish settlers in the West Bank consume over 800 liters per day. The latter number becomes even more outrageous if compared to the meager amount enjoyed by a Palestinian, that of 70 liters per day. This problem is accentuated in the so-called Area C in the West Bank for a reason. Area C consists of nearly 60% of the total size of the West Bank, and unlike Areas A and B, it is the least populated. It is mostly fertile land, and it includes the Jordan Valley, known as the breadbasket of Palestine. Despite the fact that the Israeli regime had in 2019 decided to postpone its formal annexation of that area, a de facto annexation has been in effect for years. The illegal appropriation of Ain al-Helwa Spring by illegal Jewish settlers is part of a larger stratagem that aims at appropriating the Jordan Valley one donum, one spring, and one mountain at a time. Of the more than 150,000 Palestinians living in Area C, nearly 40%, over 200 communities, suffer from severe shortage of clean water. That shortage can be remedied if Palestinians are allowed to drill new wells, expand current ones, or to use modern technologies to allocate other sources of fresh water. Not only does the Israeli regime army prohibit them from doing so, even rainwater is off limits to Palestinians. An Amnesty International report published in 2017 concluded Israel even controls the collection of rainwater throughout most of the West Bank and rainwater harvesting cisterns owned by Palestinian communities are often destroyed by the Israeli army. Since then, the situation became even worse, especially since the idea of officially annexing a third of the West Bank obtained widespread support in the Israeli Knesset and society. Now, every move made by the Israeli regime army and Jewish settlers in the West Bank is directed towards that end, controlling the land and its resources, denying Palestinians access to their means of survival, and ultimately ethnically cleansing them altogether. The Beit HaMikdash protests continue, despite the heavy price being paid. Last June, a 15-year-old boy, Ahmad Bani Shamsa, was killed when an Israeli regime army bullet struck him in the head. At the time, Defense for Children International Palestine issued a statement asserting that Bani Shamsa did not pose any threat to the Zionist regime army. The truth is, it is Beit HaMikdash that is under constant Israeli regime threat, as well as the Jordan Valley, Area C, the West Bank, and the whole of Palestine. The protest in Beit HaMikdash is a protest for land rights, water rights, and basic human rights. Bani Shamsa and later Salim were killed in cold blood simply because their protests were mere irritants to the grand design of colonial occupying fake regime of Israel. The irony of it all is that the fake regime of Israel seems to love everything about Palestine, the land, the resources, the food, and even the fascinating history, but not the indigenous Palestinians themselves.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Hosseiniya. To his path from IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bihi nasta'in.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
In the beginning, I should like to express my sincere condolences on the coming of the grief-stricken month of Muharram. In this episode of the program Husseiniyya, we are going to be concerned with some more senses of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam on the way of his movement from Mecca to al-Kufa. When Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam left the city of Medina in defiance to the suggestion to recognize Yazid out of the city of Mecca, it was at the station of Tan'im, quite close to Mecca, that he came across a caravan that was taking some goods from Yemen to Yazid in Damascus. In order to show his opposition against Yazid, and in order to gain some of the goods that the Umayyads, that is both Muawiyah and Yazid, had to pay to Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, but they never fulfilled that condition that was earlier made in the peace truce between Imam al-Hassan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam and Muawiyah. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam decided to take whatever was available of all goods in the caravan. However, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam intended to show his opposition against Yazid. And in showing his opposition against Yazid, the camellias and those people who were escorting that caravan, they shouldn't be harmed or abused. Hence, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam delivered a short talk over there. It goes in this way. Any of you who may wish to change his way and to join us in the journey to Iraq, we shall pay off his travel fare, and he will receive our best treatment, and whoever favors leaving us, and we shall pay the travel fare for the distance they have traveled up to here. Now we find that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam took the belongings of that caravan that was making its way to Yazid in Damascus. Yet Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, as the Imam of humanity, the Imam of justice, the Imam of peace, and the Imam of loving mankind, never did anything in order to violate the right of anybody, even those people who were escorting that caravan. Now we find that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam did this quite intentionally. Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam intended to show that he was against Yazid, he was against the Umayyad hegemony, yet he never intended to overlook the right of any of those people who were being paid in, who were being paid in order to escort that caravan. According to some records, the soldiers and the men who were escorting that caravan were really impressed by that gesture of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. We find that in a revolutionary movement, made by Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, respecting mankind and respecting humanity and that kind of moral standards, spoke the truth of the movement of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, and this is an evidence in support of that. It shows that even if in opposition against Yazid, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam never did anything out of oppression regarding the right of anybody, even if they were being paid to escort a caravan that was going to make its way toward Yazid in Damascus. From this, we understand that in any movement, we have to consider and respect humanity and the right of other people, even if they might be associated with our enemies. Thank you.
Food for thought.
Salam, everybody, and here is a wise statement to contemplate upon from Imam Hussein, peace upon him, prior to his martyrdom, while addressing the people of feeble faith who go back on their words. You're missing your chances and losing your lot. The one who breaks his oath, breaks it at his own peril. Allah will certainly compensate me if you leave me.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
The Light.
As the U.S. is experiencing its worst heat wave, Boston zookeepers are working extra hard to keep the animals cool to avoid overheating. Some get frozen treats, and some, like the yak, get a water hosing several times a day when the temperatures rise. The hardest part is cooling down animals belonging to cold climates, like the reindeer. Since reindeer don't like water, the hosing down is a big no. Instead, the poor animals sit in front of a desk fan all day to stay away from the heat. The birds have it a little easier as they spend most of their time in air-conditioned dens.
In Indonesia, a group of university lecturers have come up with an idea of building a robot to help people during the coronavirus pandemic. The robot is assembled from electric household items like pots and pans and an old television monitor. It was named Delta after the new coronavirus variant ripped through Indonesia. The robot was initially built to entertain residents of a village in the country's East Java province. But the head of the robot-making project says he decided to shift his function into assisting people dealing with a deadly virus.
With this new Delta variant and the surging number of COVID-19 cases, I decided to turn the robot used for public services into one that sprays disinfectant and delivers food and necessities of residents who are self-isolating. I'm shifting the function to serve only the members of the community who are in need.
The interesting thing about a robot is that it greets people when delivering things to isolated residents. The developers of the robot say it has been built in a joint project with local people and is by no means a high-tech device.
We don't know much about woolly mammoths that went extinct some 10,000 years ago, except their scant references in archaeology books. Now scientists have discovered that the giant mammals could walk incredibly long distance. Scientists from the University of Alaska have concluded that a male mammoth named Kik covered enough ground in its 28-year lifespan to encircle the Earth twice. To come up with the data, paleontologists analyzed one of Kik's well-preserved tusks. They say the animal lived with a herd through its infancy and youth and then went on to live alone. Scientists hope they will learn more about mammoths by analyzing further data from Kik's remains.
After an epic 17-month journey that drew international attention, China's famous herd of wandering elephants has finally returned home. Wildlife protection officials said the elephants safely crossed the bridge over the Yuan River to reach their protected habitat. The Asian elephants also received a little encouragement from wildlife rangers to help them get home. Staff used corn trails as bait and built artificial roads to ensure the herd took the right route. The 1,300-kilometer odyssey that began in March captivated audiences with several highlights. One of the highlights was the birth of a calf in November. In June, drone footage was captured of the 14-member herd as they were sleeping outside of a village. The world's oldest wooden boat belonging to Egyptian pharaoh King Khufu has been moved to its new home in a painstaking transfer process. It took 48 hours to move the 20-ton vessel to the Grand Egyptian Museum from the Giza pyramids. It was carefully fixed inside a metal cage and carried on a remote-controlled vehicle. The 4,600-year-old vessel, also known as Solar Boat, was not built to sail through seas. In ancient Egypt, pharaohs commissioned solar boats which were essentially virtual vessels to transport them to the afterlife. To fulfill their purpose, they were buried in pits next to royal burial chambers. Prehistoric cave paintings found in Spain proved that Neanderthals were the first artists on Earth. A new study says red markings discovered in three caves near Malaga did not occur naturally. They were made by Neanderthals nearly 65,000 years ago. That's when modern humans did not inhabit the continent yet. The findings suggest that the pigments were applied at different times, sometimes more than 10,000 years apart. This shows that Neanderthals returned to the site over time to make symbolic markings.
I believe that this art made by the Neanderthals will be also found in other caves around the world. This time figurative art, which we have not paid attention to, may be precisely the oldest art in the world. So this place in Spain is one of the caves with the oldest art in the world.
Researchers say the pigments are yet another evidence that the intellectual capabilities of Neanderthals have been underestimated. Neanderthals went extinct about 40,000 years ago.
Egypt's forgotten art of Batik is undergoing a revival thanks to a designer who has been working hard to bring the ancient cloth decorating technique to life. Working tirelessly in a small workshop in Old Cairo, Samer Hassanyan has enhanced the art of batik over the years. Samer is one of the few designers in Egypt to use the traditional method to design on fabrics. The art consists of patterns created by applying melted wax onto cloth before dipping it in dye or painting over it with a brush. The fabric is put into boiling water in order to melt the wax. The ancient Egyptians used the batik fabric mostly to wrap the coffins and mummies. However, the difficulty of mastering the art caused its disappearance.
Batik has disappeared in Egypt because no one shared their skill. As a teacher, I find that it is very important to provide as much training as I can because people realize how difficult it is when they start learning the techniques.
Samer has now a skillful artist in her workshop who designed colorful fabric using the technique. Samer says her goal is to produce unique designs that are particularly identified as to Egyptian and represent the country's rich cultural heritage.
Artists in an Egyptian village work hard to keep alive the ancient tradition of making papyrus paper despite a tourist downturn amid the coronavirus pandemic. The village of Karamus in northeastern Cairo is the largest hub of papyrus production in the country. Many of the residents of the village are involved in farming, processing and decorating papyrus planted in 25 farms near the village. The Pharaonic era tradition includes cutting strips from the plant, pressing them together and drying them to form a sheet. The artists then decorate the papyrus to create beautiful products for tourists. However, the industry has been affected by the coronavirus pandemic, forcing the artists to use more creativity.
We are trying to think out of the box to keep this profession alive. We made products out of papyrus paper, like wallets, notebooks, drawing sketches, new products, so we can keep going.
The artists have also launched online stores to sell their new products. Papyrus producers say they have lost nearly 80% of their income in the last 2 years. However, they say they will never stop making papyrus and will make every effort to keep the ancient cultural tradition alive.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
You you can find tin boxes in every house, with people often throwing them away after consuming what they had inside. But an old lady in Belgium has turned it into an obsession for years to fill her home with these fascinating containers. 83-year-old Madame Dardenne has gathered around 60,000 vintage tin boxes in a span of 30 years. The empty containers of all sizes now occupy four other houses. They once used to hold all kinds of goods, ranging from coffee, biscuits, tobacco, tea and soap to shoe polish, are now piled high all over the building that belongs to Dardenne. Some of these boxes, according to her, come from as far as India and Japan. Dardenne says it all started with a chocolate box that was given to her with a painting of a blonde girl in a blue hat.
I consider this box to be the first of my collection. It is a box of Belgian Côte d'Or chocolates that a relative of my husband gave me, believing that I was interested in boxes.
She sees the boxes as history books with decorations and writings on them describing major events and reflecting contemporary culture. The collection is the largest in the world, listed by the Guinness Book of Records. Located in eastern Belgium, the museum can be visited by appointment. Humans have damaged the environment perhaps more than any other species, but there are always some who go out of their way to help animals in distress. Juan Carlos Rodriguez and his wife run a sloth rescue center in the lush outskirts of the Venezuelan capital, Caracas. They have so far saved over 45 sloths. The couple decided to start helping the furry mammals last year after running into a sloth that had been badly injured. They saved him and called him Chewy, after a character in the popular Star Wars franchise. Juan and his wife are now alone in their life-saving journey. are not alone in their life-saving journey, as their vet friends also help them with services and donations. The coronavirus pandemic has disrupted lives all around the world, but it's important to try to stay fit for humans and animals alike. Penguins in an open zoo in Thailand have been keeping their daily routines, although no visitors are allowed due to COVID-19 restrictions. They are regularly taken out of their air-conditioned enclosure so they can enjoy a walk or swim. The 41 flightless birds consume nearly 25 kilograms of fresh fish each day. The cute animals at the zoo are aged from 1 month to 18 years old.
South Korean medical workers manning drive-through coronavirus testing centers have a new way to cool off and rest amid hot summer days, recovery buses. The medical workers are now able to enjoy their breaks at these buses, which are equipped with air conditioning, cold water, and snacks. The workers are allowed to take off their protective suits that trap heat and create an environment difficult to tolerate. Some of the buses also have shower booths and bunk beds to help the medical workers deal with their hard work. They say the buses are refreshing.
I almost feel like I'm stuck in a heat dome, like in a car with the air conditioner off in the middle of summer. It's so hot that it's even hard to breathe. But when I come here during the break time and rest in a much cooler and more pleasant environment like an igloo, I can recharge and work cheerfully in the afternoon.
These buses were first designed and used as resting places for Korean police officers and firefighters. Now, 22 of them are deployed to testing centers across the country. The government is considering deploying more recovery buses amid rising temperature and a new wave of coronavirus infections.
An aquarium in the French capital, Paris, is celebrating the birth of a baby black-tip shark. The female shark is 55 centimeters long and weighs 560 grams. She's currently quarantined in a small pond so she wouldn't come under attack by adult sharks. Officials at the aquarium say she'll be ready to swim amongst other sharks in 3 to 4 months. She was born last week at the aquarium, an event the caretakers say is very rare.
It's a rare event for us, which hadn't happened here for the past 5 years. The birth is quite rare in aquariums and in captivity in general. In fact, there are often embryos that won't survive, or they're sometimes stillborn. That's what makes it a rare event, which also occurs at night. We had the chance to observe it during the day, which allowed us to intervene very quickly, and were able to recover the little one.
The International Union for the Conservation of Nature has designated black-tipped sharks as a vulnerable species. It's particularly poached in some countries for their distinctive fins. The marvelous creatures have a torpedo-shaped body and often spin out of water while eating. They have specialized cells in their snouts that detect the electric current of nearby prey.
Cats are notoriously volatile animals, as we all know. One moment they are purring for your attention, and the next they can't stand being touched. Now, a Canadian firm has come up with an app that can help you better understand your feline friends. The app is called Tabby and works with artificial intelligence. The AI's algorithm was trained at a clinic in the city of Calgary. The developers of Tabby hope their product can be useful for novice cat owners and vets alike. The app can also help monitor the health of cats. Tabby's developer explains how the app functions.
It uses artificial intelligence, so specifically machine learning, and it's coupled with the feline grimace scale. And what the feline grimace scale is, it's a way for humans to be able to determine if a cat is in pain or not based on the ear positioning, the eye positioning, the muzzle, whiskers, things like that. And so we were able to train a machine using machine learning and a series of images to be able to make that determination. So if you're somebody who has a cat but you don't have that training, you can just use the app and it can help you determine this, how your cat is doing.
Sounds very useful. The Tabby is not perfect though and runs into problems when trying to decipher the mood of black cats. Despite the hiccups, the developers say the program will get better at doing its task as its artificial intelligence develops through practice.
Children saying is the light of guidance and the ship of salvation.
IRIB English Radio in the month of Muharram presents today's special. Every day for 15 minutes.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah the Almighty, dear brothers and sisters, Salaam alaikum. Welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Today we're going to speak about the month of Muharram. Every day is Ashura, and every land is Karbala.
Every night and every day.
Today, Monday, is the 7th of Muharram, 1443 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 25th of Mordad, 1400 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 6th of August, 2021 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. I invite you to listen to some parts of Ziyarat Ashura and a short commentary of this Ziyarat.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم عليكم مني جميعا سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار يا أبا عبد الله لقد عظمت الرزية وجلت وعظمت المصيبة بك علينا وعلى جميع أهل الإسلام وجلت وعظمت مصيبتك في السماوات على جميع أهل السماوات فلعن الله أمة أسست أساس الظلم والجور عليكم أهل البيت ولعن الله أمة دفعتكم عن مقامكم وأزالتكم عن مراتبكم التي رتبكم الله فيها
Upon you and upon all of those who were killed is the salam of Allah from me for eternity, as long as the night and the day remain. O Abu Abdullah, surely the tribulations are great and unbearable, and your tragedy is great for us and for all the people of Islam, and unbearable and great is your tragedy in the heavens, and for all of the dwellers of the heavens. May the curse and la'an be upon those people who laid down the foundations for the oppression and wrong done upon you, the family of the Prophet Ahlul Bayt. May Allah curse those people who denied you your position, O Ahlul Bayt, and removed you from your rank, which Allah Himself had granted you.
On the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his family and companions, be with today's special. Every day from IRIB English Radio. By Allah, the loss is great. Surely the day of Hussein wounded our eyes and made our tears pour down, and thereby it made us inherit sorrow and calamity until the final day. Imam al-Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance in his well-known Ziyarat al-Nahiya, addressing Imam al-Hussein, cries, "But as I have been hindered by the course of time, and as Allah's decree has prevented me from helping you, and as I could not fight those who fought you, and was not able to show hostility to those who showed hostility to you, I will, therefore, lament you morning and evening, and will weep blood in place of tears out of my anguish for you and my sorrow for all that befell you until I meet death from the pain of the catastrophe and the choking grief."
Hussein al-Gharib al-Gharib al-Hussein, Hussein al-Shahid al-Shahid al-Hussein, Hussein
Every day is Ashura, and every land is Karbala. Imam Khomeini, who was the establisher of the Islamic Republic of Iran, a true follower of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, and fought against the oppressors of his time, refers to his statement, "Every day is Ashura and every land is Karbala," as the great statement, and stresses on keeping the message of Ashura alive and putting it into practice, saying, "This statement is a great one." Our nation must always pay attention to the fact that even today is Ashura, and that we must stand up against oppression, and that we are currently in Karbala and must act according to it. Karbala isn't limited to a specific land. The incident of Karbala isn't limited to a group of 70-something people in the land of Karbala. All lands must play the same role as Karbala did.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Rabbi Nasta'in. In this episode, we are going to talk about making connections with Imam al-Hussein al-Salam as a necessary condition in our lives. In case mornings are accepted by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, they would certainly make a capital for us in the world hereafter. And those people who are who have made such a capital for themselves, not only for the lives in this world, but also for the eternal lives in the world hereafter, they would certainly be resurrected together with prophets, with good people, martyrs, and those people who have been devoted to the Islamic religion and to the cause of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. However, in this regard, it must be indicated that joining the caravan and the camp of Imam al-Hussein al-Salam has got many ways. There are many ways of joining the camp of Imam al-Hussein al-Salam. Imagine that, for example, an individual, a person, who is, for example, a shopkeeper, he can collaborate with other people, with other mourners of Imam al-Hussein al-Salam, or make facilities that they need for holding commemorations of Imam al-Hussein al-Salam.
Standing here alone on a land so far from home, a place where angels cry, while innocent children die. Hussein has said goodbye, praying some of them survive the torture and the heat. They come to watch him weep. They cry out, Hussein, ya Hussein, Hussein, ya Hussein.
Merit of visiting the grave of Imam al-Hussein, peace be upon him. It is related in numerous traditions that do not avoid visiting the grave of Imam al-Hussein even during the days of prohibition. And one who visits him, that means his grave, in fear of the enemies, Allah will give him refuge from the great fear of Qiyamah, and he will gain reward proportionate to the fear. And the one who fears due to their fear, Allah will bestow him a refuge under the shade of his empyrean, while he shall remain along with Imam al-Hussein and shall be protected from the fear of the day of Qiyamah. It is related in traditions from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, peace be upon him, that wealthy should visit the grave of Imam Hussein twice every year, while the indigent should visit once every year. another lesson from the day of Ashura. Be patient. Those who are aware of the story of Imam al-Hussein, peace be upon him, often reflect on his tragedies and the patience he exhibited during that day during their own hardships in life. This wasn't a type of patience that came from a type of weakness, but a demonstration of his steadfastness and bravery. Those who saw Imam al-Hussein on the day of Ashura reported, "We have never seen a man remaining as composed as Imam al-Hussein was when his relatives and children were slaughtered before his eyes." As a Muslim, we know that the main important goal of Imam al-Hussein is enjoining the good, forbidding the evil, an essential pillar of Islam. Every Muslim is required to forbid evil and enjoin good, and this is what the stand of Hussein epitomizes. In a speech, he declared that the only objective of seeking this reform is to emphasize the significance of enjoining good and forbidding evil.
We cry for Imam Hussein because we're affected by his tragedy, because we're emotional human beings. I mean, who can bear listen to this tragedy that took place on Imam Hussein, the grandson of Rasulullah, and not cry? You don't have to be a Muslim. You don't have to be a practicing Muslim to cry for Hussein. You just have to be a human being. Don't you have emotions? Don't you have a heart? Aren't you affected? The tragedy of Imam Hussein alayhi salam has no match. What happened to Imam Hussein has never happened to anyone. Look at what fell upon Imam Hussein on the day of Ashura and his family. Every type of pain, physical pain, psychological pain, emotional pain, and that heat, the fatigue, the thirst, 3 days he had not drank water. He would see minute after minute one of his companions go and they were killed. He would see his children crying thirst, thirst. How many people can bear seeing his children crying thirst? All that he was burdened with, and then he knew after he dies they'll attack his woman and his children. They'll beat them. They'll consider them as slaves and prisoners of war. Who can bear and listen to the story? If they tell you an ordinary man, this happens to them, you'll cry. What if this is Imam Hussein alayhi salam, the grandson of Rasulullah, the Imam, the third Imam of Ahlul Bayt, the representative of Allah? This was done to him? Who could bear that? Who can listen to this and not cry?
Thank you for joining us till this moment, the end of today's special from IRIB English Radio. May Allah increase our rewards of our mourning for Imam al-Hussein and let us be one of the companions of Imam al-Mahdi. May Allah hasten his reappearance. Till another episode of today's special, we leave you in Allah's protection. Fi amanillah.
Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.